Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, our special guest this week, Joe Walsh.
Yeah, it's been great. Really good.
This is actually the part of the podcast where I ask our guest, which is yourself, about yourself. Where you been? Where you at? Where you heading?
Oh, yeah. I mean, been working on Fall Guys now for about 3 years, I think, in total, since we came up with the idea of it a while ago. So it's been a long time. But it's been super exciting to watch the game grow and develop since we launched it a couple of months ago now. And I'm really excited to see where we can take it over the next, you know, like year or two. It'd be really exciting.
Yeah, I think besides you guys, 2020 has been quite a year for everyone else. I can't imagine what you guys went through with this. I hate to say it was like a sleeper hit, but really it has to be somewhat of a surprise to be how much of it kind of took over the internet in this year. Would you kind of like give a little insight about how and when it happened to you guys, where you guys realize this is one of the biggest things that will be happening for 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I think really we had like plans in place and we had predictions for what would happen when the game launched in terms of, you know, how much resource we would have. And we had, you know, we really weren't sure if anybody was going to play the game. And we had like contingency plans for what happens if, you know, the game goes live and there are 100 people playing because people just weren't interested, you know. And we had a plan in place for, oh, probably going to have to scale down the team and just put it on life support. And then we had a mid-success plan. And then we had a massive success plan, which was like the absolute best case scenario where we could like try and double the team size soon and do all these things. And I think that plan, I think we sold like 8 times as many copies as that massive success plan did on day one. And that initial plan was for like 6 months or something ridiculous. So like orders of magnitude, like 10, 100 times more successful than we ever really dreamed of, which was, I mean, amazing, because it's meant we've had so much publicity and we've managed to like ultimately bring so much joy to everybody who's been playing the game. But obviously that had the consequence of, it seems like a long time ago, but all the server issues we had, everything's just melting because we didn't expect this many people to be playing. So it's been a roller coaster for sure, but things have somewhat settled down.
Yeah. Coming from the game development side myself, I would love to kind of go into the early days of prototyping. I'm sure the team has grown in size since the release to accommodate like the crazy demand that you guys have been delivering. Can you kind of talk about the early stages of the prototype stage and and your original plan of growing the team to versus now what you guys have going?
Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, really, when we started prototyping Fall Guys, there was two of us working on it, just me and our tech director called Steve. And we essentially, it was our job to figure out whether or not Fall Guys could be fun and what it meant to play Fall Guys. And like, there were things that we knew, like we knew that it was going to be mini games. We knew that it was going to be like silly physics and it was going to be funny. And the game was going to operate on humor and accessibility and like an instant hit of gameplay, but we had no idea what the character would feel like to control, like how wobbly were they going to be, what did they do, you know, all of these things were just, I don't know, probably like whatever happens in a game show, we'll figure out as we go. And but also we had no idea what the rounds were going to be either. We had literally nothing to go off, and it was really a process for 3 months of trying to answer some of the biggest burning questions that we had before we could start making the game. So the idea with prototyping and pre-production was that we should go into making this game already having a good understanding. And for us, that meant firstly answering that question of like, what does a full guy do that makes them feel like they're on a game show? That was like written on the wall in the studio. Like, what is it that they do? And that's where we like started to think about stumbling and falling over and losing your balance and diving and, you know, hitting your head and tripping over stuff. It was like, we went through this process of recording GIFs of all of our favorite moments from Takeshi's Castle and all of these other game shows, and basically trying to nail exactly what it was about game shows that makes them like so entertaining, and then translating that into mechanics. But things like the dive mechanic was just, I think we had put some ragdoll stuff in that could make you get hit by objects. And we needed a debug command that could fling your character forwards. And suddenly it was like, oh, that actually is kind of like a dive mechanic. Like, that could be interesting. Maybe we should just leave that in the game. Maybe we should stack it on the end of a jump as well. And so over time, the character like evolved and has become what you see in the game. You know, and then fast forwarding now through development, where the team grew to about 60 people, I think, which probably at its peak during development. Now I think we're pushing way over 100 people who are working on the game in some form, but that's not everybody like making stuff, which is quite important to clarify, because a lot of people just see the big number and think like, oh, surely, well, you should be making like 10 times as much content. But now we have to think about problems we never thought we'd have, like, you know, customer support and cheating, like combating that, and community management is now way bigger. Like, so the team is growing in every single direction, which is really exciting, but definitely logistically has proven to be tough. There have definitely been some teething pains.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of layers there I want to unravel. being an original team of two, right? You had, you know, it was all about the game and incorporating any design elements. The first thing too, I would love to kind of hear your thoughts about it. You know, part of the recent development for marketability of a game is the streaming aspect of it, and being a designer yourself, it is a very integral part, at least for PvP type of games. Like, how much of that did you have to consider for game design? And, you know, you were mentioning about physics being like a major component of this randomability and rewatchability and replayability element. Was a lot of that intentional, or were you just seeking to play something that you want to make something that you want to play? And how much of that streaming aspect was considered during your development?
Yeah, so I think for us, Fall Guys is quite interesting because it is an inherently streamable idea because it's based on game shows. And so for us, we weren't really thinking, what does the game need to do to be streamable? We were thinking, like, what does the game need to be a game show? And one of the things that we felt was important was that it needed to create one in a million moments that you wanted to share with people and that you wanted to like play back in excruciating slow motion. And that was one of the pillars of the game, was a million slapstick moments. And that's what we, every time we looked at a level, we would score each level on how successful we thought it would be at a couple of things. And one of them was, can this level give us a million slapstick moments? Like, is there comedic depth to the game? Will people be laughing at this round in a million different ways? And so like, it didn't come from quite a like business oriented mindset of like, all right, how are we going to get people to stream this game? And it's just, how do we make it feel like a game that people would want to watch, because it's a game show. And that's what, we want to make you feel like the star, and we want to watch, we want people to share replays, because that's how these game shows work. So like, it's kind of a happy accident that like Twitch and streaming has blown up as much as it did, while Fall Guys is also, you know, a very streamer friendly game. So that was very deliberate. But another thing that I think is maybe slightly more conscious is that when I used to watch like PUBG, or if I'd show a friend PUBG, you have to sit them down and you have to be like, okay, here's the premise. There's like this giant circle that you can't see, and we all fell out of this helicopter, and the circle's like, and there are all these rules that you have to explain. And this is why all the guns are here and stuff. And it's just like complex and it's hard to explain. But Fall Guys, it's like, there's a finish line, run, go. Oh, they're falling over. Like, it's just instantly understandable and instantly watchable. And that was really important, because we wanted anybody to be able to like drop in and understand what round they were playing. We have like a rule that every round has to be explained in three words, and that's exactly why. So if your mate comes around and it's like, well, what are you doing? And what do you have to do in this round? It's like, oh, we've got to grab a tail, or like reach the finish, or don't fall in this line. that's five words, but you know what I'm saying. That was kind of what we were going for with it, was something that's just instantly understandable.
Yeah, I think that simplicity of it is what really helps all age groups kind of participate. I mean, I have a 10-year-old myself, and you know what 10-year-olds, everything's about Fortnite. And then I'm slowly seeing during this pandemic, what's interesting is how he's evolving into a real gamer, right? It started with Roblox, started playing Fortnite, and now he's playing Valorant and playing Fall Guys. Wow. I was like, whoa, yeah, within a year. So it's very exciting because there's a whole new generation of gamers. And like you said, the barrier of entry, there is like an element of streamable that game designers, I feel going forward, need to start really be conscious of, because it really does help with the marketability. Some games can't avoid it, you know, where they're not made for streaming. But when you can, I feel like a lot of that being able to, you know, the old days of channel surfing, right? Can it catch your attention within a second without a friend really explaining you, you know, all the rules? It's one of the reasons why when I saw Fall Guys, I instantly got it. It's the reason why I watch Ninja Warrior. It's exciting. Yeah. It's a game show and you're just going through obstacles and you're with them the whole time. And at the same time, you know, you're kind of looking for that ridiculous moment for your friends like fouling up. Right. So I highly applaud. Of course, you guys are finding tremendous success with that. And it definitely seems like you were very conscious at the very beginning of how to set this up so that anybody can participate and want to play, which is the biggest part. Going back, man, starting with a two team. I mean, I'm sure your 5-year plan was scrapped within a day of release, right? Of growing the team. And one of the biggest thing with indie development is not overgrowing the team to an extent of non-control, right? And now you're like 60 going to 100. And this is happening within a year or two. So I would love to kind of hear your thinking process with your original partner there of how to sustain that and like the business side of it. Now you're like not just being a full-time designer, but like managing people, I imagine, for a lot of your time. And now doing it remotely. What a year for you to kind of learn this on the fly. I would love to kind of walk through that disaster and how you are able to like figure that out and find great success through it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's really worth caveating that Fall Guys is not, it's not like Among Us where it's literally like three friends. Like I was put onto Fall Guys as a team of two, but Mediatonic as a company is much bigger. But obviously it starts like any other project where you put a very small amount of people on it and you trust them to figure it out. And then the plan was always to grow the team to like 40 people or something like that over the course of development. And we have other games in the studio. Like we're indie, but we're like a big indie studio that makes lots of stuff. So it's probably worth, like, sometimes we get lumped in with like the indie darlings. And it's like, that's very nice for us, but it's not quite the same as like, you know, The Witness or anything like that, where it's like one guy making it in his basement. So first we'll caveat that. But secondly, like, you know, it's been really hard for a team this big to work remotely. And we launched the game from lockdown, and it was literally like one day we were all sat around in the studio, and then the next day we all went home, and that was March. And we haven't been able to get together as a studio and really celebrate the release. It's been just heads down. The game comes out, got to keep working on it, got to make more content. So we haven't really had much of a time to take a proper breather. So hopefully over Christmas we get a bit of a break. But really, like some things haven't been that bad, but really there are just moments in development where you wish you could just be in a room with a whiteboard and you could just figure something out. Like we were looking at like a new feature we're working on today, and we're trying to figure out where the buttons on the screen need to go. And it's like back and forth on Slack. It's like tedious, and you're sharing ideas, and you just want to be there in a room with a piece of paper and just draw it on a thing, move things around, cut things out. Like that's the bit that you really miss, is that like camaraderie of being in the same room and being in it together. You do feel quite isolated for sure, which makes things hard. But it's a lot easier when your game is very successful, you know, sort of brings everybody together, which is great.
I mean, to be fair, everyone's making a game in their basement right now. but it does help to kind of have, I think a lot of indie developers are now moving more to like mid-tier, which is they have some backing and publishing. It used to be, I mean, there are some darlings out there that are still like you know, one man team, one man army is doing it. But I'm seeing a shift now that there's a lot of publisher interests, at least, and companies that are, you know, at least compartmentalizing with you guys, like you guys did in a room, and like figure something out and then we'll give you backing, which is very, I think, the best of both worlds, because it is of every successful game. There's thousands more that kind of go through the turmoil of indie development and don't make it. But yeah, it's really humbling to hear that you guys are spreading the love and joy of the creation behind Fall Guys. So as you were saying, can you kind of speak to the responsibilities that have changed from before the release and now? Like how much of your time is split, even with doing press, to actually coming up with features and the next updates and stuff, to just simply managing?
Yeah. I mean, for me, like for a lot of the game's development, my job was literally changing the numbers on the character, like figuring out what the jump height was, figuring out how the turning circle should be and how the ragdoll should operate. And that was just months and months went by of just fiddling numbers, having a chat with someone, changing some stuff, scrapping it all, starting again. Like I think we scrapped the entire character about 3 times. And over time, yeah, like my role has become much more, you know, it's much more to be like in charge of the vision of the project and to help make sure that everybody is pointing in the right direction as the team grows, because I'm not the best level designer in the world. Like my levels are a bit rubbish, but we've hired some amazingly talented level designers who you really just have to like let them run free and make sure that they're, you know, they've got their restraints in place. And you know, we've hired an amazing team, and so yeah, like much more so now my role is looking forwards and trying to figure out what features the game is missing, but also responding to the community and making sure that they feel heard, and that they, like, ultimately one of the big things we've been trying to do is make sure that the community feel like that they have faith in us to deliver on Fall Guys, because they, you know, they know how this game needs to be and they know what they want. And really we're just trying to give them that game. And it's hard. It's really hard. But that's been our focus, and that's occupying a lot more of my time now. Is, you know, even we released season 3 a couple of days ago, and suddenly Discord is alight with the character feels different. You changed it, and we're like, we didn't change anything, but something's different, and they're right because they play the game way more than we do. So that's kind of like how things. We're much more reactive now than we were during development, and it's very much just trying to balance the like immediate short-term reactions of like, oh god, we need to fix this thing now, and also the long-term, what does this game needs to be, you know, replayable and to sustain a healthy community for multiple years, which is really what we'd love to do.
Yeah, being an artist myself, one of the running joke, right, is having a hovering art director behind you telling you what to do and micromanaging, right? Now that you guys started in a room with two developers, and now you have a whole community that is in support of your game and is in love with it and basically criticizing every little update that you have. You guys have like thousands or millions of people that are constantly at you about game news. So how do you leverage that, and like you said, balance that so that you don't sacrifice your own vision of what's you feel is correct versus how your community feels where you should go? Because yeah, that always messes with innovation, right? Like, do I please everyone or should I think ahead, type of thing?
Yeah, totally. Like you're never going to please everybody, and there's always going to be a consequence. But I think really the way we do it is we make sure we consider like three things when we're looking at the direction of the game. The first one is, like, what do we want as developers? Like, it's our game. What do we think is great? Like, what excites us? Because if we need to be excited about the vision of it, and we need to be passionate about what we're making, and we need to believe in that vision. So first is, what do we want? Secondly, it's like, what do the community say they want? Like, that's really important, because the people who discuss the game on Reddit and who discuss the game on Discord and Twitter are like, they're going to be like evangelists for the game, and they're going to be the passionate people who are going to going to get stuck in and tell their friends like, dude, Fall Guys is so much better than it was. Like, we should stop playing Fall Guys again. Or, you know, they're going to share the love of your game. And so it's really important that you listen to those people, because they play the game the most. So they do have really, really great in-depth understandings of the game. But the third thing is, you've got to think about, you've got to look at the data that you're getting back from the game, and you've got to be careful that you balance the very vocal, passionate community that you have with the unspoken community who aren't on Twitter. And, you know, that's something we've seen quite a lot, is that, for example, if you talk to Discord or Twitter, they just want harder levels. They just think everything's too easy and it's the breeze. So we added like big fans as like an early game level where there are no set hidden paths down the bottom. You have to do this like very technical jumping puzzle. And people are like, great, love it, amazing level. But when you look at the data, there are like swathes of people who just can't complete that level because the technical ability is much higher than all the other levels. And it's a proper hard skill check. And we suddenly realized like, there are loads of kids out there or like less able people who aren't as technically talented. And this level is now like a blocker for those people to enjoy the game. And, you know, that's just a classic example of like having to weigh up those two different things. And that really informs the level design as we go. So those are kind of the three things. It's our vision, what the passionate community say, and the like hidden majority that we can look at the data to try and read.
Hey guys, let's take a break and have a word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by AppFigures. AppFigures is all about giving game makers the tools they need to get more downloads and revenue. You may already know them for analytics and app store optimization. Now, AppFigures can help you track competitors from how many downloads they're getting and how much money they're making to their audience demographics and even which SDKs they use. Their competitor intelligence gives you great context. Say a competitor adds a new feature or was mentioned in the news. With AppFigures, you can see if that brought in more downloads. Got a great idea for an app or a game? With AppFigures, you can figure out how big the market is and how much money you could be making with it. And that's just scratching the surface. Whether you're growing your app or building a new one, AppFigures has the tools you need to reduce risk and get more downloads. You don't need a large budget or a data science degree to do this kind of stuff anymore. AppFigures has made it affordable and simple. On top of tools, AppFigures also provides a lot of guides and tutorials to take you step by step through gaining more visibility with ASO and increasing your revenue by learning from your competitors. They just released a free guide on that, actually. So head over to appfigures.com, appfigures.com/on/gamedevunchained to try AppFigures for free. If you like it, then use our special code GDU3030 to get 30% off for the next 3 months. You're welcome. Yeah. So another point that you kind of brought up was, you know, everyone always dream of having being part of a game that just hits hard, right? Especially if it's like a original IP. It's one of those things that just, there's a lot of luck involved, skill, all these variables that you don't really have control. It just happens, right? And but most people kind of stop it at there. It's like, once I get to that stage, I'm good, right, as a developer. But as you were saying, now it's about the long-term support of this wave of maintaining momentum. It's a whole different side. I think the harder side of game development, more than 50%, for a game developer to kind of go through. Can you kind of talk about through that process? Going through the hardest year already, but one of the most exciting year for you guys. At the same time, like making sure that, you know, the gravy train doesn't stop. It's one of those like hard things. I want to breathe, but yo, this is once in a lifetime type of thing. How long can I sustain this and everything? Would love to kind of hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, it's a really tough balance to strike. The difference between having a healthy development cycle and making sure that you're not overworking your team and that they're not exhausted. But also, like you said, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity, and you hope that you can draw energy from it and that you can push forward. But you just have to be really careful. And it hurts because, you know, when we launched the game, we always wanted to launch with like 40 levels, like 50 rounds, something like that. And we launched with 25. And that was a bet we had to make because, like, we think it's better to get the game out there than to delay it for 6 months and make more content, because now is the time. Everything is aligned. You know, we've got to strike while the iron's hot. And so we kind of released it, and we were worried that people would burn out on those levels early. And then you start to see it happening. And it's the temptation there is to just throw everything at it to get content out, hack things together, you know, just rush things out the door. And we made the decision to not do that and to stick to our plan for season two, which was 4 rounds that we would release after 2 months. And you just have to brace yourself and and just ride the storm out and know that those people who are frustrated will come back later if you can meet their demands. And so we like put some surveys out to the community to say like, hey, we know that this isn't what you want, but tell us what you do want. Like, what is an acceptable amount of rounds to release per season? And they said like 8 rounds is what we want per season, or 6 rounds is what we want per season roughly. And that gave us a target to try and work towards. But it was really important that we hit that target in a sustainable way, because like you said, like, it's not Fall Guys doesn't have 3 seasons and then we're done. Like, we're working on season 4. We're working on season 5 now as well. And we can't cram to get season 3 out the door with 7 levels and then be exhausted and then it be expected to do that again and again and again. We have to build up to a higher level total in a sustainable way. Otherwise, we're going to be exhausted. And it's like, it's a tricky thing you see in the online gaming community, right? Is there is this massively passionate community who are anti-crunch and are pro developers' rights. And that's amazing to have that support. But at the same time, the other louder voice is, we need more content now. Like, what are you doing? Why are things taking so long? And it's like, oh man, like, you can't have both. You can have things like, there's a great like triangle. I think it's called like the iron triangle. It's like, you can have things like, it's like quick, good, and cheap. And you basically can only really pick like 2 of the 3 things to do. And you know, you have to balance the development cycle. So it's stressful. It's been really hard mentally for a lot of the team the past couple of months. You know, logging onto Reddit to see posts at the top about how bad the game has been over the past week is rough. Like, it drains you mentally. And I think people aren't necessarily always aware of the effect that it can have on people. But at the same time, like you said, it's energizing to have a hit IP. You know, it is what we always dreamed of having as a studio. And I come to work every day still excited. Well, I can't come to work. My bed's just there, so I sit here. But, you know, it's just energized every day to come and make the game better. And what's great about having a game is out there is that response time is much, much quicker. We were just making stuff in isolation a year ago with no idea whether what we were doing was really any good. It's just guessing. But now, today, we put an update live and you can check the Discord and instantly people are like, yes, this is better, more of this, do this thing. And it's, so that bit's really good, but you can't have it both ways. You've got to like, take the breath for this move, really.
Yeah. Just to give a little background, you know, the podcast is called Game Dev Unchained. And it was like, like you said, right? There is that weird balance out there in the community that I feel like is misunderstood, where, yeah, let's have this happy anti-crutch pro game dev life for everybody. In my case, I recently just played Red Dead and I looked at that game. It's like, there's no way that they could have done this in a reasonable time frame. It took them 8 years. It would have taken them 12, 14 years, 2 game cycles to finish this. It's epic, right? And it's a balance that I don't think a lot of people empathize enough to understand. And I always equate it to, I've had bosses before who were very pushy about like crunch and all this stuff, but because we have a hit on our hand, right? It's like, man, how much of a dollar amount am I different from him? When I get in that state, would I push my team? Because we have a hit on our hands and we got to keep pushing, right? And I don't think there is, when it comes to creative output, there is any way around that to accommodate everybody and still have, you know, be able to hit deadlines. I think it's just one of those things that game developers have to accept in a reasonable manner. So I'm always curious about hearing, you know, your side and, you know, what, you know, going through that, riding this wave and, you know, making sure that everyone is doing it in a healthy manner, because I do think sustainability is way bigger than just short-term spurts. And I've been on teams that just solely, you know, liquidated its core members, right? And it's like the feeling's not the same anymore. I wish I would have those friends around still. And I don't know, man. I don't know any other games that, you know, there's another game that's out right now that's kind of going the same turmoil where the founders are like regretting. It's like, yeah, we did this wrong. It's like, yeah, you did. It's like, oh, you got all these bugs with your games, right? I think people know what I'm talking about. But I would love to kind of ask you more about, you know, Fall Guys and the development side of it. you know, it's great to have the community now to kind of give you feedback as you're going, to kind of help guide you with your schedule in a reasonable way without overdoing it and guessing. I would love to kind of hear also a little bit more of the background. So you were telling me hitting the iron while it's hot, right? And hindsight is kind of 2020, which is, that saying has a new meaning now. So it feels like you had some semblance of the feeling of how everyone's at home and this game is like perfect for this timing. Like, how much of that was intuition? How much was that was research? Like, how did you come up with some data knowing that the game would do really well right now and we need to push this out regardless of our grand goal?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really data led. Like, we didn't have millions of pre-orders and there wasn't really any way of measuring the hype for the game until we started making a Twitter and we started getting people interested. All we really had to go on was that we'd taken the game to some trade shows and we'd showed it to, we went to PAX East, we went to PAX Australia, and the reaction to the game was so insanely positive. And so we felt like it might have that same reaction when we released it, but there wasn't really like a push to get it out. Because the coronavirus stuff that's what's just been happening in the background. It was more like we just need to release the game. We can't just keep working on it. At some point you have to stop. Like, I think there's a great analogy, which is like making a game is like, it's like trying to build a plane while you're going down the runway. And at some point you have to stop building it and pull back on the throttle, and whatever you have made at this point will either take off or it won't. But if you don't pull back, they're going to run out of runway and it's going to all crash for sure. And so you're kind of just like throwing things out the back. And there were like huge features that we wanted to do that were like, nope, that's not going to, we're never going to finish that. You know, like we had like action replay mode that you see in like, you know, like the kill cam in Call of Duty. Like, we had a whole feature about that where you could rewind everything and you could pick highlights, and it was, yeah, just so complicated and didn't work. And it's like, well, throwing that out the back of the plane, you know, some features that we've added, like the show selector, having multiple shows running at any given time. So it's like, nope, out the plane, get rid of it. We need to focus a little bit more on a core experience. And I wish we'd done that a little bit more, if I'm honest, over the course of development. I think we should have focused more on what do we need the game to launch with and what can we add later, rather than these like huge ambitious features. But it's just so hard, like you said, hindsight's 2020. It's so hard to know. But there wasn't really it wasn't like a reaction, like a rush of like, oh god, coronavirus has hit, this game is perfect, let's get out the door. It was always very much like, this game is coming out in 2020, like, and it needs to come out in 2020, so let's release it. And there were some other things that we were working with Sony to get the PS Plus deal, and those things get locked in like a long time in advance, and so you really don't want to miss the boat on that because you never know when you might get that opportunity again. And that was absolutely huge. So it's a combination of a lot of things, but really, you just at some point you've got to say, this is the game, it's going to sink or float, like, go, let's see what happens.
Yeah, and to kind of ride off of that, what you just talked about, would love to kind of hear your thoughts. I don't know if you know, you guys have been going full throttle the whole time, but if you had were able to hit pause at some moment to kind of analyze, like, all right, what went on last year? If I were to make, or, you know, future updates to the game or another game idea, how do I catch some of this lightning in the bottle to recreate the phenomenon that it created? Like how much of that were you able to look at to be like, some of this can carry forward to the next project, you know, with some variables, but some of this success can be repeatable. I don't know if you had time to think about that, you and your team, but we'd love to kind of hear your thoughts about it.
I think Fall Guys has hopefully managed to like breed a new, hopefully like a new generation of multiplayer games that are more accessible and that aren't shooters. I don't think we're the first game to do that. I think like you've seen the resurgence of like Rocket League going free to play, and it's just done like absolutely ballistic numbers. And I think Fall Guys and Rocket League share a lot of the same DNA. I mean, that was something we talked about a lot during development. It was like, if we could just be the next Rocket League, that would be enough. Like, we would be so happy. And so I think it was really about like figuring out what the shared DNA is of those games and trying to package that up in like a new genre, really, of multiplayer game. And you know, we're not really looking at the next project right now. Like, everyone is super focused on updating Fall Guys, but I think when we do, that same DNA of like, you know, accessible, funny, wholesome, multiplayer games is something that maybe we could come back to again, because it feels like there's lots more to do in that space.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to also talk about you know, the roadmap that you guys got going. So season 3 just came out, and I'm assuming season 4, 5, 6. Like, are you revisiting a lot of the features that weren't able to be packaged before? Are you learning from the previous season, or seeing suggestions from communities where you didn't even think about? Like, how much of that went into, you know, future updates in season 3 and, you know, whatever comes after?
Yeah. So, I mean, to begin with, we've been really focusing on things that we knew that we wanted to always do. And so that's why, like, we just released custom games, and that was always the thing that we thought would be great, because it opens the door for now to streamers to get them to be streaming and playing with their community. And we thought that was one of the really exciting things about Fall Guys, is that, like, Ninja and 59 of his fans all get to play Fall Guys together in a way that you can't really do with any other battle royale, because stream sniping just ruins everything. Like, Fall Guys doesn't really have that problem, because you all know where everybody is anyway. So, like, screw it, let's just see how it goes. So there are features like that, which we were always in the roadmap to do post-launch. And the same with, like I mentioned, like the show selector. And that's something that I think we're pushing more, and we're coming up with, like, more interesting ideas now, is, like, variety is what makes Fall Guys great. Like, the fact that you load up the game and you've got no idea what you're going to be doing this time, like, because there are new rounds, or there are new variations, or there is a new combination of stuff. And I think that's what we're going to be looking at a little bit over the next few months, is what else can we do in the world of Fall Guys that adds variety to the game, so that you log on and there is, like, something new to do. And that might be, like, a new game type where you can play with your friends in a new way, or it might be, like, totally different, like a creative mode or something like that. You know, like, those are things that we're starting to look at now, where it's really exciting, but it's also quite scary, because there aren't really many games out there like Fall Guys. And so we're sort of having to make it up as we go along. So those are the kind of, like, the camps we're looking at, but, like, we're definitely looking at what the community are asking for too. You know, we, like, released Crown Ranks, and that was, like, a thing that they asked for, is that they wanted a much more permanent indication of how well they were doing over the game that lasted from season to season and gave people, like, real bragging rights. Like, if you've earned 1,000 crowns, how do I show off to everybody else that I've earned 1,000 crowns in the game? And this is something that we've been, like, we've heard the community, and we've been working on, is to give them that. So it's like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. But we've got some really cool stuff that the community are requesting that's coming soon as well.
Awesome. I like to throw a curveball, because I just do that. So going back to the very beginning of development, right? A multiplayer game for a small team always seems to be, like, a very challenging aspect. When developing game, it just seems like when network has to be involved, it's just not something that routinely, unless you've done it before, you go to first. You usually just have a single player experience, something easier. A second part of that question is, was that always intentional to have a multiplayer? Were you guys able to roll up your sleeve? How much experience you guys have with that? And why Unity? Right? Was it, did you guys look at all the options, like Unreal as well, before going with that? And did the network thing had a play in that as well?
Yeah. So we've done a real time multiplayer game, relatively recently, that was called, Gears Pop, which was like a Gears of War Funko Pop mobile game. And although that's not, you know, instant multiplayer, like real time play in the same way that Fall Guys is, it allowed us to have some understanding of how to make these games. And we worked on a card game before, which was asynchronous, but we had our, like, we'd wet our feet in multiplayer online stuff on that has to operate at a large scale. But we knew we wanted to use Unity, because we've always used Unity for our projects for about the past 5 or 6 years in the studio. And if you're doing something complex, you don't also want to be learning tools at the same time unless you can help it. It really helps to just use what you know. And that was really important to us, that we would go forward to that. So it was never really considered Unreal or anything else, because we have a great relationship with Unity. They were like able to help us solve the problems, because they were like, no one's ever made a 60-player physics game in Unity before. Let's see if you can do it. And we'd like to help you, you know, figure that out. So that was really good. But we also, like, drafted in, like, veteran talent that we knew we needed on the project, like Immediatonic. We have, like, this very, like, fundamental sense of like, oh, we've never done this before, but let's give it a go. And that's always how the company has operated. You know, when we were given the Gears of War, like IP from Microsoft, we've never really done anything on that scale before. And it was like, okay, cool. We can do that. Yeah, sure. We'll figure it out. And that's been like the ethos, which has always been very exciting and very like thrilling, because it means you get the chance to do stuff. Like, I've never led a team like this before. Like, Fall Guys is so far out of my comfort zone, as it is for the rest of the team. But the Netcode was like the one thing where we were like, we need pro help here. People who have done this before and people who are going to know the pitfalls. And we worked with another team to like get the fundamentals in place and like have made sure that we're learning. So now like loads, we've got much more experienced people in the studio who understand those things. But yeah, we definitely didn't scrimp on networking talent to begin with, because we knew how hard this was going to be.
Well, it's definitely a good choice. I would love to kind of hear you walk through that scenario where you guys suddenly have millions of people playing. Like, can you kind of, like, what was that back and forth looking like? Was it just increasing servers or like, it's a lot more technical than the rest of us can understand and more complicated, but we'd love to kind of hear that problem and how you guys were able to fix it and turn around, because it didn't feel like there was an issue, at least on the player side, where it was like disastrous in weeks on end where people were waiting and having connection problems, at least from a consumer side of things.
Yeah, totally. Like, so I guess there are a couple of big issues that we had to solve. The first one is like the servers. Yeah. So a lot of people think that servers are just a thing that you can add more to and that fixes the problem. Like, you just, why did you not just like double your server count? Or the other one we get is, why did you not predict this? And we did. We ran simulations where we had 8 times our highest estimate of what we thought we would get on day one. Like 8 times. Like, that's a lot. And that cost us a lot of money to run those simulations. And that was very much like, there's no way. Like, we've done our due diligence. It's not going to be higher than this. And then, like, lo and behold, day one, it's like 3 times higher than our 8 times estimate. Like,
what a problem to have.
Yeah. Like, it's just insane. But you can't, like, if you triple, like, this is a very simplified version of it, and I don't even understand how it works. But, like, say you have, like, a problem with a certain server thing overheating and you add more of them. A lot of the time what that does is it just moves the bottleneck somewhere else to another thing that you couldn't have ever predicted. And I think that's the thing people miss, is like, it's so easy to be like, well, you should have, like, why did you not just know that if this you added, it would go somewhere else? But these things work in such weird ways. And like, they're so complex that you just, it's just the way it goes. You have to fix it. Like, you put out one fire and then the fire just springs up somewhere else that you couldn't have predicted. And so you just have to work through those things methodically and slowly, because you can't rush it either. Like we were saying before, if you just like, oh, I think it's this, I'll throw a bunch of resource at this, and then that's not the problem. You just wasted everybody's time and resource. So you have to be methodical, and the servers have to come down for a while for you to add new stuff. So, you know, that was really scary, because for like the first week of Fall Guys, we had quite a lot of downtime, and you just don't know. Like, yeah, now we're 2 months in and we know people are dedicated to the game, but you just don't know if everybody who downloads Fall Guys on their PlayStation boots it up and sees server maintenance in progress, like, are they ever going to come back? Did we miss that player? Will they never get to play Fall Guys? They'll never tell their friends about Fall Guys. And so there was this real panic of like, the success of Fall Guys is slipping away from us, and we basically have no idea right now how to solve this problem long term. And so that was scary. That was terrifying. But people stuck around and people have had faith, and our server team are like, almost like the unsung heroes of the project for solving those problems the way they did. So that's really been like the big stress early on, was just trying to figure out what was going wrong and why, and how we couldn't have ever predicted it, really. It's just so mad. And then, I mean, those problems are fixable. Some of the much harder things are the issues with latency. Like, everyone's seen the memes of the tail grab from 10 feet away, or the person who crosses the finish line before you and they get eliminated or whatever. Like, but that is like, that's just really fundamentally hard to solve in like a third person game where you can see everybody else. Like, you can't pull the same tricks you can in a shooter, because you see things in a different way. So that's been a real challenge, and it continues to be something that we're working towards, because people are just in different positions on each other's screens. Like, it's just how multiplayer games are. And it's an art. It's an absolute art to hide that fact from the players to the point where they can't realize. So we've still got some work to do there, but it's a real tricky one.
Yeah, there's never a time that I feel more useless than being across a programmer, and especially a network programmer, because we're there like with our pencil and paper and they're like solving an issue that there's nothing we can do. It's like, well, we're just pretty useless in that moment. That's why like multiplayer games always scares me, because they're just so out of our control. And you're talking about the lag issue. I mean, that at least is still a very technical problem, just to kind of make that invisible to the player. But there's a lot of trick on the design side that you can kind of and even that's more programmery to kind of hide the fact that there's lag, right? There's just a lot of predictability and putting things in front of people so that by the time we get to the player's computer or online network, it just looks like it's real time. It's a whole different element that like it's never a go-to for small teams to try to tackle, which is, I think, is a lot of missed opportunity. Like you guys, right? You know, you guys were a small team with great ideas for multiplayer. And I feel like a lot of designers have great idea for multiplayer, but it's just so much to tackle where people just waver away and they get disheartened by their like, you know, tertiary passion project and they don't try again, which is a lot about, you know, the indie spirit right there, about that part of the industry. Another question I would love to kind of ask is that the COVID side of things, right? You're talking about, you know, especially being a designer yourself, you guys like to talk, right? It's just what you guys do, and you guys need to talk to get brainstorming sessions through. And it's just a whole different element talking to the computer screen all the time and not getting that nuance of delivery, right? Because I walk by those rooms all the time. You guys are in there for hours on end. And at most, you only want to be on a Zoom call maybe an hour, and the rest is through Discord or whatever textual messages, and you just don't get the same feeling. So how did you guys get around that when Fall Guys is so integral around design to make it work?
Yeah, like, I mean, one of the things we've had to do is like set up some like fairly hard and fast rules for the way we work. And the first one is basically like no meetings over an hour. Like it's, people don't have the attention span. It's impossible remotely. People just start looking at their phones or getting distracted. Like it's just, it's too hard to do. And, you know, another one is like, you shouldn't be having more than like 8 people really in a meeting. If you actually need to make decisions, that group of people has to be small enough, which has been really important. And then it's the same like on Slack. If you see a conversation, like a discussion last more than 10 messages, you would solve this problem in a few seconds if you just jumped on a one-to-one call. And that's one of the hard things, is getting used to like one-to-one calling people, because it's not like people don't really call each other anymore. Like you just text or whatever, but like you have to like ring people up and ask how they're doing and sit there and talk about stuff. So that's been like, those are a couple of rules that we've had that I think have really helped us during development. I mean, there's, the design stuff is hard, but really just getting on calls and playtesting stuff religiously has been really, really important. But some of the hardest things, like you said, are you just can't read the room in the same way. Like you can all be on Discord playing something, focusing. And when you're in the room together, you just get this sense of like, oh, everyone's like yawning or stretching and they're just not really into it. And you already know by the time you finish that playtesting session that like something needs to change. But we've had multiple times, like even recently, we came off a level playtest and I was like, oh, I mean, this is great, let's ship it. And everyone's like, what? Like, no, dude, it's not good at all. Like those like dissonances are really hard to solve internally. You just have to over communicate, I think, is the biggest part of it. Make sure that you don't assume anything and that you're always talking is the most important thing.
Yeah, I think one of the misconceptions that people are having, I don't know what it is, but I think a bunch of freelancers and lone artists are loving the COVID situation forcing people, right? And I think in the front end of development, you know, maybe the content creation, all that stuff is okay for people to do remote working and do that. But the pre-production and the near end of production is where I'm seeing a lot of developers having a lot of complaints, like the test kits, the shipping, the play testing. That's the part where a lot of studios, big and small, are still trying to figure out, because, you know, even within a studio, not everyone got a test kit. It's like one per cubicle, you know, if that, or you got to bum off the programmer who's not using it that day or something, right? It's very varied. And now that everyone is in their own home and there's the security protocol issues along with that, it's been a very difficult situation. Would love to kind of hear more about that and how you guys got around to it to make it work. That, you, that even a bigger problem, you guys are a live game. So it's out there and updates are coming more frequently. Like how are you guys resolving this with 60 plus developers? I'm assuming, is everyone same location based, or are you guys looking at having remote people as well? That's not around.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone is working from their living room at the moment, but we are based, we have an office in Madrid as well. So we have some of the developers are in Spain already, and we have some people in Brighton too. So we're already a little bit used to working remotely, but we are having that exact problem of like, Sony aren't going to send us 60 dev kit PS4s, right? Like, and even if they could, they wouldn't, because those things, you have to be careful with where they are. You don't really want them just like lying around people's homes and stuff like that. Especially not PS5 ones. Like, so that's been a real challenge. And one things we've been able to do, which has been really good, is sort of like embrace our enthusiastic community and help them have them help us test the game, because we can test something ourselves like for hundreds of hours, but we know within the first hour of doing a big play test whether or not things are going to working, because we have thousands of hours worth of data to suddenly work from. So that's been a big thing, is rolling out like community play tests with our Discord, where we give them early versions of levels, or we let them play stuff, and they're really passionate and really awesome around getting involved. Cause that's, we just have to get bodies into the level really. Like that's the hardest thing. They're amazing at getting on board and helping us with that. No, sorry, I can't hear you.
The last question I want to ask you that I'm very curious about, because you're a young developer, and a lot of young developers are very key to like, yeah, work from home, I can do whatever I want, and you know, are leaning into that a bit more than I think the rest of the age groups. But now, you know, that you have that the successful game, you're going through this, knowing how what it takes at the highest level, how to manage people and still deliver a live game. Going forward, right, eventually, hopefully, you know, with the vaccine and everything, we're going to go back to the office. What can we take? How do you see the best case scenario of a hybrid approach of some people remote going back in the office? Like, what is your best case scenario of that? Of what's the best way for developers, not just at your company, but like around the globe, where we can learn and like take what we've learned so far the last year going forward?
Yeah, like I can't see myself wanting to go back to a 5-day work week in the office, if I'm honest. Like, I just think that I actually quite like having some time to just focus and work on stuff. Like I've taken to the working from home stuff quite well, and I like the opportunity to like get your head down and just focus on stuff. I do quite like that. But I think for me, almost like the most important thing is like the work-life balance has shifted. Like I'm not wasting an hour and a half each day commuting 5 times a week. And that's just so nice to have more of my day back. And it makes me like healthier as an employee of a company to like have that time. And I love the idea that I could now like balance those two things of like, cause it sucks to not see everybody every day. And you really miss that. You really, really miss that collaborative aspect. And so for me, I think probably 2 days working from like 2-3 ratio, but I don't quite know which way around I would like it of working from home, working in the office. One of the things that we found hardest actually is like, I've worked in Mediatonic for a long time, like 7 years. And so I have like a really strong relationship with loads of people, and I can have a chat to them if I'm feeling shit, you know, and like I've got a great support network there. But what we found is really hard is like new people who join the company. And it's really, it's not that hard to like create a good working relationship with them. Like kind of what I was saying before, you can jump on calls and you can brainstorm stuff and you can go through things. And there are loads of tools to make that easy. But what you miss are the moments around the coffee machine, like just asking people how their day is going, what have they been up to at the weekend. And especially for new people, it's really hard for them to find those connections with the team that aren't professional. And that is just like, hey, how are you doing? Like, what's up? What are you up to? What games are you playing? There aren't the same moments in the day for like chit chat and water cooler talk, which is the glue that like really bonds your team together. Like, we can't all go for a drink after work. And that was something that has gotten me through really difficult times on projects. Is like, you finish the day, you're fed up, pissed off with the project, and you just need to go for a pint and vent about whatever it is that's causing you a problem. And you reach the end of the day and it's like everyone just disappears offline. And it's like, oh man, I have all this like frustration and no one to vent to. And so one of the things we're working really hard to do as a studio is to try and find more ways to create those moments, to like get people to know each other a bit better, especially new starters joining the team, so that the team is not just a well-oiled machine who like makes games, but it's like a healthy place to work where you have build relationships and you have hopefully like friendships with other people that you work with. So when things do go wrong, it's not just logistical. It's like, I've got someone to go and chat to who can like cheer me up. That's really hard. And I think that's why it helps to have some working from the office days for sure. So it just gives you a chance to build those bonds.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, man. The best bits of me being in the office have always been non-work related stuff. It's never me, because when we work, we have our headphones on and we're very seclusive, right? And even with people at arm's reach, those are our best buds, but we never talk to anyone else aside from group activities, right? Yeah. And I look back, it's always basketball at lunch, soccer at lunch that I look forward to. When it comes to venting, walk around the office outside for like 20 times to vent. And then it's never moments about, oh man, I love it when I sat down at my desk and got work done. It's just never that. So it is kind of like counterintuitive. If it is about work, then just do that at home. If it's about connection, do it at the office where everyone can get together and commune. I think you put it exactly how I feel development should be going forward. And it is going to be very hard to suddenly tell game developers to forget all that life that you got back and just go back to the office for 8 hours straight. I really do feel not a lot of developers will be pushed to do that. There is always like those happy hour Zooms, but you know, that to me is kind of hypocritical. It's like, dude, I'm tired from Zoom meetings and you're telling me to do another free hour of Zoom. It's like, let's rethink this, guys.
We just did one on Fall Guys.
Yeah, there you go.
We all played Fall Guys and we like fired up a custom lobby, and it was like the entirety of the studio basically all in the same custom lobby, which is like, it's been so much fun. I've had a great time doing it, but people can't help being like, there's a bit of Zed fighting on that thing over there. Like, we should probably fix that. Like, why is the graphics gone all weird on this
level? It becomes
like,
worse.
And it's like, now it's just working. Like,
well, I'll go get on that. All right, let's get some Jira Tass in here. we do have a producer in this call, right? It just becomes work. But I want to thank you, man. We are at the top of the hour. I want to thank you for dropping by and sharing your story and the team story, and continue success, man. Definitely looking forward to it. I play it with my son all the time. It is a relief, man. It is the perfect game during the pandemic. You guys just nailed it. It's hilarious. Every time I do it, I get frustrated. I throw the controller across the room. But I love it. I always come back to it, and I look forward to all the new courses that you guys got going. But this is my time to shut up. Hand over the mic to you so that you can give a shout out, give attention to the listeners and viewers out there. Where to find and what to click through, man.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is definitely I would encourage everybody to go and check out Fall Guys Season 3. Like, we have ratcheted up the amount of levels that we've got. So we've got 7 brand new levels in the game, which is like the new record for us. And they're definitely the best ones we've ever done. So it's a really exciting time to jump on and get in the festive spirit playing some Fall Guys. So definitely check that out. Follow me on Twitter at GoSujo is my Twitter handle. I'm always up for just chatting Fall Guys as well. You can find me in the Discord, the Fall Guys Discord as well, the official one. I'm always there hanging out, talking to people. So yeah, come say hi. I love hearing about what people like and don't like about the game. I do, as rough as it can be, I do love talking about Fall Guys and all the things we need to work on. So yeah, please stop by and tell me what you think. been awesome.
All right. Thank you, man. And see you guys all next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.